when, you know, my children tell me, are we allowed to be happy? I tell them that, look, we can live. We live in Yerushalayim, and we can go on, and we can live in our house, and we can laugh, and we can have a good time, and we should. And that's what the soldiers and everyone is fighting for, so that we could live, and we could live our lives, and not to feel guilty for living, because that's the way we can fight against Hamas, is by living and living a happy, productive life, and having, you know, weddings and having simchas.
Hi, I'm Alex Fletcher.
And I'm Rivki Silver.
And this is Deep, Meaningful Conversations, powered by Town Appliance.
Alex and I wear a lot of hats.
We're both writers.
And speakers.
And so many other things, mothers, wives, friends, and active community members.
We love using our skill sets to bring you the best guests to share their wisdom, perspective, and advice on relevant topics.
And we love schmoozing about the topics that are on our mind, and hopefully yours too. Like one listener said, DMC is like hanging out with friends for coffee and talking about the stuff we're all thinking about.
So whatever you're doing while listening to our podcast, thanks for joining us for a DMC. This season of DMC is brought to you by Town Appliance. So we live out of town, as you all probably know by now. And if this is new news for you, surprise, we live out of town. Often when you live out of town, you need to make a big purchase, like a new fridge or oven. You're going to go online to the big box stores like Lowe's or Home Depot or like a local store. We don't have Frum appliance stores here with showrooms. So we often think about the stores we know in our area and either drive out to the store or just buy it online. One of the Town Appliance's differences is that their customer service is designed for the Frum shopper. They know what you need. I can pick up the phone and speak to one of the customer service representatives, and they will walk me through my options, guiding me to fit the right appliance to fit all my needs. And they offer what no big box store can, specific information for the Frum shopper on Shabbos mode and any things like that. You know, like there was one time when I had my oven needed a repair, and the repair person came. He's like, you know, there's some people who, like, I heard that they leave their stove on for like a whole day. Like, and I was like, you mean like Shabbos mode? Like, I do that like almost every week. And he was like, it's not really meant for that. I was like, well, then why does it have Shabbos mode? It was a very interesting conversation. Like, he didn't know, but someone from Town Appliance obviously would know this. So Town Appliance offers all brands, all models for all budgets. You'll find their website and contact information in our show notes.
We'd like to thank ERA Plastic Surgery for sponsoring this episode of Deep, Meaningful Conversations. So ERA Plastic Surgery is located in Lakewood, New Jersey, offers a number of medical and cosmetic inpatient services. Embrace and enhance your natural beauty with cosmetic and medical plastic surgery led by the expert hands of Esther Raisi Ackerman, PAC. Your transformation can feel radical, yet look so natural, others won't even notice. So every procedure is designed to help you reveal your beauty while minimizing visible scars. ERA offers anti-aging treatments, ear reshaping and repair, wound care and stitches, scar and blemish treatments, advanced laser therapies, infant and newborn corrections, as well as laser hair removal.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yes, a wide variety.
That's so cool.
And it's all inpatient. ERA offers personalized care that puts your comfort at the forefront. And you'll find contact information in our show notes, so you can schedule your no-obligation phone consultation and learn more so you can look as good on the outside as you feel on the inside.
We are so glad that you have joined us today for today's episode of DMC. We are thinking about all of our listeners during this extremely challenging time for the Jewish people worldwide, and Alex and I are committed to providing content for you that will be helpful and hopefully uplifting and hopefully be a bright spot and hopefully be a bright spot among many future bright spots in all of our lives. So there are many heroes in this war, and some of them are the special individuals in Eretz Israel who have done whatever they can to support their fellow brothers and sisters who have been displaced from their homes due to this current war.
Yes, and we know these acts of chesed are just awe-inspiring. I was just speaking to my cousin who lives in Ramat Beit Shemesh, my first cousin. She works at a clothing gemach. That's her year-round job. And she just mentioned, like, she hadn't returned my call. She's like, I'm putting in these 10-hour workdays because now we're using the gemach to sort clothes for displaced families.
Yeah, wow.
It's just so special to hear that. And also, if you remember, Deanie Coopersmith was mentioning in our last episode about Centers Yeshiva, how they created a refugee center.
I love that she was mentioning. It's like such a small world. Like, yeah, because like, right? Your son's there, and then she's mentioning it. It's like, I love it.
That was really special.
It was amazing.
I also knew a little bit more behind the scenes, but I wasn't sure if it was like public to publicize. But at this point, I can, and I'd love to share a little bit more about what they've done since that recording. So the basement of the yeshiva has completely been transformed. They've created this laundromat.
Amazing.
Because people need to do their laundry. There's this whole play area with toys that they've gotten donated and purchased for all the children to be there with their mothers. And my favorite part of this story is that they've arranged for local firm women to provide manicures for these refugee women. And I just was on a Zoom call with Rabbi Center last night, and the language he used, he's like, to enable these women to feel like women. And yeah. I was, this is not a seminary. This is Rosh Hashiva. Like, he knows how crucial it is for these women to feel like human beings.
It's such an example of like chesed, like above and beyond, you know what yes. I mean? Not just the clean clothes and not just the toys and not just that, but these elements of like connecting to our humanity at a time when yes. it's just so challenging.
So sensitive, right? Like mm-hmm. another level. And for me, it's just so inspiring to see yeshiva ask themselves, what can we do? How can we share whatever resources we have? How mm-hmm. can we be creative to give to these displaced Jewish people? And it's just true, no se ol b'chaviro, and doing something about it. I personally am just so grateful my son is there getting this chinuch. And just the other day, Levi told me they also have this outdoor area of the yeshiva that have this like ninja climbing structures. Mm-hmm. And the kids, the displaced kids, really need more space than just the basement.
Yeah.
So they've taken this area that's for the Bachram and they've tented it off. And they just, I don't know, it's a sacrifice for the Bachram. And Rabbi Sensor was saying that like they've provided more things for, they got them a pool table and some exercise equipment just to like help them. But it's like, good. Like, let our kids sacrifice for this.
100%.
I'm okay.
I think that's a very important lesson.
I'm good with it.
You know? Yeah, I think that all this shows the tremendous capability that we have within ourselves to push ourselves out of our comfort zones, to truly feel the pain of others, to like to take your head out of the internal inward navel gazing that is so easy to be stuck in. And just to say, feel your feelings, right? We are definitely into feeling your feelings in DMC land here. But at the same time, like, look outside of yourself and get out of your own head and see, and to try to just get into the headspace of the people around us who are, you know, in such a difficult position, and to ask what we can give up that could be to their benefit. I think that's a tremendous thing that we could all ask ourselves, what could we do? It was reminding me of a piece that was just published in the most recent, I don't know if it's recent by the time this comes out, but in this issue of Family First, I had interviewed a couple of women from remote who had also like pushed their, like given what they could of themselves to create a like organizational structure for women who wanted to volunteer. They created this like command center. Like, all these Haredi women wanted to volunteer. They're like, what can we do to help? And they didn't necessarily know where to turn. And so two friends, Chana Irom and Brachi Segev, they said, well, let's figure out a way to consolidate all of the opportunities to help, and then people can call us and then we can tell them where they can help. And then meanwhile, there was this other woman, Adina Goldberg, who had just opened this beautiful brand new wig store near remote, like gorgeous, amazing mega store. And of course, no one's buying. I mean, I don't want to say no one, but, you know, business is not as brisk as they had hoped because of the war. And so she told Chana, she's like, use my space. Like, my space is just sitting there right now. Use it. And she's giving them coffee. She's giving them cookies. Mm-hmm. Like, she gave them, like, all this workspace and these computers and mouses and desks and desk space. And it's like their command center now. You know, just these people saying, like, what can I do to help? And thinking outside of the box and then doing it.
Huh.
Like, Mika Amcha Yisrael.
Yeah, and it just reminds me, I feel like with hosting myself, I'm like, oh, my guest room isn't just right, or we don't have exactly the right space or the amenities. And it's like, you know what? Like, if people need, like, it doesn't have to be perfect, you know? And, like, that's also inspiring to me about all of this. It's like, whatever I can offer is going to, people are desperate. Like whatever, and again, to make a difference between hosting people for Shabbos, but just my own and my own little world here.
Yeah, exactly.
Like we can do for others without everything having to be just right. Exactly how we want it, right?
Exactly. Sometimes we just have to do. Mm-hmm. The stretching ourselves and going outside of our comfort zone is really what this episode is about. I got a WhatsApp from a woman named Sarah Levy, who is also from remote. There's a lot of chesed apparently going on in remote. I'm sure there's chesed going on across Eretz Israel, but like three women from remote that I've talked to recently. So like kol kavod wow. Remote. So she opened up her home in remote Bet to a family from southern Israel who was displaced. And she sent me some videos of the children from both families dancing and singing together. And it was just so incredibly moving. And we had so many questions. And so we decided that Sarah Levy, maybe she would come on, if maybe she would be able to come on and do a DMC with us. This is a story that we felt needs to be told. We can bring all of our listeners a little bit into Israel and into her life and her world and her sacrifice. And we're so grateful to give Sarah a platform here on DMC.
So here's our interview with Sarah Levy, and we hope you find it as inspiring as we did.
Sarah, we are so honored to have you on DMC. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Well, I'm honored to be here. Thank you.
Could you introduce yourself briefly to our listeners? Like, tell us, you know, how long you've lived in Eretz Israel, a little bit about yourself, and then how you got connected to Revital.
Okay. My name is Sarah Levy. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. And then after I got married, I lived in Kew Gardens Hills for a few years and moved to Atlanta, Georgia. Lived in Atlanta for a Shemitah for 7 years. Always wanted to make Aliyah, actually. And we'd always go for pilot trips and try to figure out whether we could do it. Some of my friends in Israel said, you're never going to make it here. But after 10 years, we finally did. And we actually moved to a yeshuv called Yad Binyamin, which is actually closer to Gaza. So they're definitely more, they're not quite the southern areas that are the hot spots now, but they're definitely in their safe rooms a lot longer than us up in Jerusalem. I lived in Yad Binyamin. It was a nice soft landing. I had a few friends there from New York, some of my friends that, you know, I grew up with, and actually another Atlanta family. And about 5 years ago, we moved to remote to Yerushalayim. We loved the yeshuv life of Yad Binyamin, but it was, our kids were getting older and, you know, Yerushalayim was always a dream. So, we found Ramot and actually it took us 2 years to renovate the house that we moved into. And one of the things that we thought about was being able to have guests. And so, you know, that was, something important to us, and that's what allowed us actually to have the family that we ended up hosting.
That's incredible. How did you get connected to even host them?
So what, you know, the whole thing was such a, I think, I don't know if it's just me, but when something traumatic happens, it takes me a long time to process it. So I remember even that during 9/11, I was still planning, I was supposed to give a talk in California, and I kept planning to get the kosher food, and it didn't hit me that no one's traveling and no one's going anywhere, and the conference is canceled. So so when we, you know, Simchas Torah and all of this took place, you know, it was a normal day. We were going to Hakafos. It took me a while for it to sink in what was going on. But one thing I realized, we went back to shul, actually, we were about to leave to shul. Yerushalayim had a siren. My husband was already in shul, and, we were getting ready to go. And of course, because of the siren, the rest of us, the girls and the family went, and my mother was with us. We all went down to our miklat, to our, shelter. And that happened two or three times. So, you know, it was thinking, am I going to shul? Am I not going to shul? My husband came back and said, I think different shuls did different things, but he said, you know what? The rabbi said that we don't want to take a chance. We have a little miklat. It's kind of squishy. So If nothing, if there are no more sirens for the next few hours, we'll go back and we'll continue our hakafas. Little did we know what was really going on at that time. Right. You know, the slaughter and all. I mean, that certainly we didn't know that. But when I did go back, we had the most beautiful hakafos, and you know, it was very memorable. And I noticed there were one or two young families that said it didn't pay for us to go home, so we just stayed here and hung out. We didn't even know if there'd be enough people to have the hakafos, and they said we don't really have a great miklat. You know, we live in an apartment building. We don't really have a miklat. So the next day I contacted one of those families and I said, we have some space in the basement and we have a few rooms and it's near a miklat. Would you like to stay here? So this particular family said, no, I'm going to stay at my mom's house. She lives somewhere else. She has a better miklat. And I was actually just going to post really for my people in my community, somebody that I knew, that if anybody needs a place with a better miklat, I have space. So I put it on the remote ladies WhatsApp group. I was about to press send. And before I press send, you know, anybody who would like a space near miklat, I suddenly see a message that pops up that says there's a family of 8 from Netivot and they'd like to stay together. Can anyone host them?
Wow.
So that was what popped up. And it was kind of, whoa, right. So then I didn't think too much about it, but I asked my kids and they were very excited. And they said, of course, we're going to figure it out. And I said, well, how do we do the rooms? And so they said, we're going to get mattresses. And they said, we could definitely do this. So then I wrote back. It was a woman in our community who was on one of the groups that paired families with hosts. And when she realized it was 8, she realized it wasn't appropriate for her space. And so she sent Revital to me. I didn't know Revital before, didn't know anything about her. I just knew that they said she's Shomer Shabbos and Kashrus. That was important for them in looking for a place. But otherwise, I didn't know anything about them. And she did ask me for a little video of the area before. So I, you know, we tried to put the mattresses and sheets and make it look nice. And we sent a video and she said, great, we're coming. So that was it. You know, I didn't really think much beyond that. That was just, they needed a place and we had it. So that was how she got to us.
Wow. And then how long from when you said yes, like how many, like, was it minutes? Was it hours until like, was it days? Like until they showed up, like how long did you have to?
Right, so this was Sunday. So this was the day right after. Oh, wow. So like I said, everything was very fresh. I didn't even process, you know, I heard things. I heard about hostages. I heard about attacks, but I didn't really process what these people were going through. I really didn't know what Netivot was. I never heard of Netivot before. I know a lot about Netivot now, but and how many missiles are there and what exactly is going on. But so it's actually a very special place. There's a lot of big tzaddikim, Sephardi tzaddikim that are buried there, like the Baba Sali. And so we learned a lot about Sephardi culture, because the Peretz family, they are Moroccan Israeli. So it was an interesting cultural mix living with them, but it's, they've been here for 3.5 weeks since the time that they came. Again, I had no idea that thing, you know, I remember the first Shabbos when we were talking about what to cook and she said, well, next Shabbos we'll make soup. And I thought, next Shabbos, I mean,
really? Wow.
A few days, right?
Wow. So that's what you signed up for, was a few days in your head.
I didn't process that a war is not something that happens in a week or so. So, yeah.
Is Revital's husband with her?
Yes. They're a wonderful family. We actually really lucked out. It's such a lovely family. Her husband works on a kibbutz near Netivot called Sa'ad. It was an area that, you know, was certainly very much affected by the attacks. And he works at a factory. I think he runs the factory. So he actually, in the past week, he went back to work.
Wow.
And so he's coming in and back and forth with the car, but he's suffering a lot because he can't really sleep there. He hears a lot. There's a lot of sirens. There's a lot of booms and missiles and, so it's not a quiet place right now, but he did go back to work. And Revital happens to be an English teacher, which is amazing because she speaks, her English is good, and her kids all understand. She speaks English to her kids, so they all understand English too.
Amazing. So
that was great. So our Hebrew definitely got better, and hopefully their English got a little better too.
And how old are your children?
We have 5 girls. My oldest is actually getting married in about 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Mazel tov.
Mazel tov.
Very exciting. And she's the one who knows about your podcast. She's 18. Mm. And then I have my other girls go until age 11, almost 12.
Wow.
And this family, they have boys. So oh, that wow. was an interesting, fun thing that we didn't know how that would work out. They don't only have boys. They have 3 boys and 3 girls.
Huh. So we'll talk a little bit more about the families coming together. I was so curious. But first, I'd like to just step back a little bit more. It sounded like for you, there wasn't much of a thought process. Could you tell us a little bit more really what was going through your head when you responded to that text message and you said yes?
Right. So, yeah, that's a good question. When I heard about a family that needs a place, what I thought about was my family and how my grandmother left Germany after Kristallnacht with her parents and her sister, and she went to England. We had a cousin who was involved in the Kinder transport, and they got a visa. And you know, she told me how hard it was when they were happy to be alive and to get out of Germany, but they had to, they didn't have places for them, and how they put all these children up in houses. And growing up, I always thought, I used to look at my home and little house in Flatbush and think of, you know, where we'd be able to put people up, and, you know, we could have a little baby here in this corner and in that corner. And it just, it reminded me of that, you know, like if somebody needs a place to flee, you know, we, my family had to flee, and, you know, how could I say no?
Wow. It is so unbelievable how we are just living history, and like the fact that you had those thoughts as a young child looking at your home. And who would ever imagine in this generation that we would have the opportunity to do this? It just gives me the chills.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think we were just lucky that we skipped a little bit in our generation of not experiencing. We had a little break after the Holocaust.
Right.
It seems. Yeah. Right. And now the cycle is, now here we are.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about the transition, what it's been like for both of your families as far as, again, like getting used to boys and also just the girls? You sent us some beautiful videos of the girls singing and dancing together, and just like, can you tell us a little bit about what it's been like these past 3.5 weeks for you both?
So it was interesting for me because I'm also a psychologist, and I don't have a tremendous amount of experience in acute trauma, but this was like a crash course, because when they came, I could see they were very traumatized. Mm. The children, you know, particularly one daughter was like frozen. I mean, she didn't speak. And I kind of saw the process unfold of how, you know, when they started to finally relax, it took at least a week for the kids to smile again. Mm. There's a little 4.5-year-old girl who broke her arm. And that was one of the reasons the mom really, she was running to the Miklat and she broke her arm on the way. And I think the parents didn't realize what was going on. So they took her out to get care for her broken arm. They went to a few different hospitals, and that's when they started to see people, you know, coming in and, you know, bodies and everything, and that they couldn't be helped in the hospitals that were near the south. And they ended up in Shaarei Tzedek, so that their daughter could get care. But the other children were left alone without the parents.
Oh boy.
In Nativot. So they were, she said one of her daughters started to throw up when they said they had to leave with the little girl to get her medical care. So all of this trauma and, you know, and how, I mean, the mom is still, you know, still recovering, but it was all also Yad Hashem in every single way. It was incredible. Like the second night she came, there were some women in the neighborhood singing. They just had a kumzitz. And I said, why don't you come with me? You know, you'll get out a little bit. And she came, and I just thought, you know, here's somebody who's actually All the women were crying, and here we live in Yerushalayim, and everything's quiet. And I thought, well, if they would hear what she went through, it would really, you know, be powerful and impactful. And so I asked her if she wanted to share her story, and she did. And when she spoke, she really started to shake and cry. And of course, it was very meaningful to everybody else who heard her, but it was good for her. And she said, you know, thank God, when I spoke, none of my kids were here. I was trying to hold it together for the kids.
Right.
And a few minutes after, one of her daughters came to join, but it was already after she had shared everything.
Wow.
And she stopped shaking. A woman came and gave her a hug and said, I'm a trauma therapist. I'm going to come over soon. And I'll come over tomorrow.
Oh, my gosh.
It was so powerful also to see how the woman spoke to her. And one of the children didn't even want to participate, but the 16-year-old son, his name is Ilai, was missing one dinner. We were doing a lot of happy, we were making barbecues and having large dinners together. They cook a lot. They're amazing cooks, both the mom and dad. So we said, where was Ilai? And he told one of my daughters, I overheard the trauma therapist saying that it's okay to cry and that it's good to cry. So I let myself cry tonight. So, you know, each one in their own way, but, there's a lot of recovery, you know, that went on in those initial weeks that I watched unfold. And so if I put my therapist hat on, it was, you know, I learned a lot. But I also had to not get sucked into the trauma. So that was also hard, to try to be empathetic and to be there, but not to fall apart myself
Yeah. I mean, when you said, you know, just like that picture of her being able to have that catharsis and to be able to let it out because of having to hold it together around your kids. I feel like that's like something that I think that all of us Jewish mothers right now can relate to on whatever level it is that, you know, we are affected. You know, obviously here you were talking about how in Yerushalayim it's calm, like here in Chutz Laaretz, it's like Kal Vachomer, you know what I mean? It's like, what about as a mother watching your kids as they also, maybe it dawned on them on whatever level they could understand, depending on their ages, like when they were also seeing like, oh, this is more than just, oh, we're having some guests that need a place. Like this is like like you were saying, this is like a historical, I mean, this is like unfolding before our eyes, something that we never would have wanted to unfold before us. You know what I mean? How are they coping with it? Your poor daughter who's listening to this now. Hello, 18-year-old daughter who's getting married soon, who maybe is listening to this episode.
Right, Shira. Hi, Shira.
Hi, Shira.
You know, different daughters reacted differently. I'd say overall it was actually very good for us to have them here. You know, I think that one of my girls said I would have been so much more scared. But these people, you know, they really went through a lot. And so they're okay and they're smiling and they're going on with life. And, you know, they were kind of a model to us. I did wish they had a gun, but they didn't. When we had to go in together to the miklat and, you know, but, you know, just their bravery in terms of what they've been through. So, you know, a few of our daughters thought, well, maybe we should go back to America. You know, it would be more relaxing there and this is scary. But again, I think being with the Peretz family gave us a lot of encouragement. And Revital is like a bastion of chizuk. And she's always, you know, giving blessings and lighting candles for the Baba Sali. And she really is a very strong woman, very optimistic. And just the fact that life goes on, you know, we really tried to celebrate and make it a fun experience together. Most of the kids, aside for, you know, sometimes having to share the kitchen and certain spaces that were hard for some of my more introverted daughters, but most of them loved, they were staying up at night and we had to tell them to keep quiet. They were, you know, teenagers, we're having a good time playing games and schmoozing. And so, you know, overall very positive.
Like one long epic sleepover.
Yeah.
But true. They do have girls, right? I want to just get this straight.
They have three girls.
So the littlest girl, Halali, is 4.5. She's the one who broke her arm. And so my kids are happy to have a little girl in the house because, you know, have a little baby, you know, young. So they're really enjoying her. And then the two older girls, they have, their oldest is also Shira, and she's actually dating a Chayal who's away now. So, you know, to visit her at one point. So that was also very moving. And the second daughter is in the middle of doing Shirut Lumi. She's 18. Her name is Shachar, and she can't continue doing her Shirut Lumi. It's in Ashkelon, which is also very hard hit.
Right.
So she's actually giving us gel manicures. So her father went back at some point and brought her gel kit, and that's the way she's, you know, expressing herself somehow and trying to feel normal. Amazing. So, and their little boys are so cute. The two boys are also, they just can't do enough. They wanted to tie tzitzis, and they're, you know, just, they want to do things. They want to feel like they're doing something to help. So they've been very involved in whatever activities are going on. One of my daughters did a challah bake. She's selling challah for equipment for the soldiers, and she had the two boys were helping her, helping her sell the challahs, bake the challahs. So they've been very, very busy.
I'm seeing this picture of all these beautiful moments. Let's take a brief break to give you the lowdown on our DMC 2023 sponsor, Town Appliance. So their showrooms are located in Lakewood, Cedarhurst, and Baltimore. They ship for free for orders over $1,000. You can order online, www.townappliance.com. They have a huge website, great selection, check it out. And they are known for their exceptional customer service, both in-store and over the phone. Town Appliance sells what you need and not just what you want as a from customer. Please visit our show notes for links and contact information.
Let's tell you a little bit more about our episode sponsor, ERA Plastic Surgery. ERA offers a wide range of cosmetic and medical plastic surgery services that are performed right in their state-of-the-art office located in Lakewood, New Jersey. The ERA Touch offers much more than a routine procedure, but it's an experience that's marked by compassion, clarity, and confidence. You're not just like, oh, another patient, like they really care. ERA Plastic Surgery offers personalized care that puts your comfort at the forefront. Esther Raisi Ackerman leads the team as a PAC with 17 years of experience and 13 years specializing in plastics. Wow. Her expertise is backed by the NCCPA accreditation and endorsement from the Jewish Association of PAs. And the facility is under the ownership and guidance of Dr. Rodney Green, who is our very own Dr. Green from here in Cleveland, which is so nice. I love that connection. In every consultation, every interaction, every follow-up, the goal is the same, that every individual who enters their doors leaves not only looking and feeling their best, but also feels truly cared for. Please visit our show notes to find the contact information.
Sir, do you have, a special story on your mind about a special experience that both of your families have shared during this time?
I would say Shabbos meals. The first Shabbos, they said, we want to make something special for you. And I said, oh, my kids want my chicken soup. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to make my chicken soup. And oh my goodness, I gave them all chicken soup and they took one spoon. And I said, nobody was eating my chicken soup. None of their kids were eating my chicken soup. So, it was just really funny because she said, no, we Ashkenazi Sephard, no, we respect all. They're all good. We're going to try to do a mix. Anyway, by the second Shabbos, there was less of my food. By the third, I just gave up. And then a wonderful neighbor just suddenly, in the middle of the meal, sent over a hot potato kugel. And I was so happy. I said, guys, this is potato kugel. This is good stuff. Everyone has to have a taste of this. So we had a little representation of Ashkenazi food. But
I'm sure, right, your table has been much more colorful, I'm sure. Like, you know, like we always joke that Ashkenazi food is primarily beige and variations of beige. So like, I mean, I love it. I'll eat it every week.
Yeah, no, Moroccan food is good. It's just very saucy and they're allowed to reheat it on Shabbos. So they just eat so
differently. Fascinating.
They eat so differently than we do. Yeah. Mm.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Well, of course they have to reheat it because what else is there to eat? You know?
Oh my gosh.
I could go for some of that Moroccan fish. I always see people making it like on, videos of it. I'm like, that looks good.
It's a lot of work. Yeah.
Has she made for you?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, oh, okay.
That's like, fresh. Are you kidding me? There's a lot of food. Yeah.
She'll teach you. So. I'm sure Ruby Tal will teach you.
And like Zemiros, they're bringing like different Zemiros to the meals also. Or?
They definitely. He was very sweet. The father's name is Sharon. We had him do the Havdalah last week, and he said, I don't want to offend anybody. We said, no. It was completely different. Completely. Huh. But anyway, he said, no, we love it. You can definitely we do a Sephardi Havdalah. So Zemiros, yeah, a little bit. I think we knew some of the Sephardi Zemiros too. So, but you know, it's not just for us, it's a crash course in Israeli culture because we live in a community where our friends are Anglos. Right. And my kids' friends, you know, even though they go to Israeli schools, and we've been in Israel for 10 years almost, we still hang out with the Anglos. But this is not only Israeli, but it's, you know, Israeli, Moroccan, you know, Sephardi. But we really, really love them. They're a wonderful family. And I wish you could have met, I really wish you could have met Revital.
Yeah, Chaval.
An inspiration. Yeah, she's also trying to get her kids into school here now.
Oh, wow.
She's fallen in love with our community too.
Really?
She loves.
Wow.
Yeah. So she's really joined us in as many activities. And my entire community, the English-speaking community, really embraced this family. As soon as they came, people came over and couldn't stop bringing over toys for Halali, for the little girl. And speaking of Yad Hashem, the mom said that when she was in the hospital, she promised Halali she'll get her something, and she wanted a Peppa Pig. And she said, fine, I'll get you Peppa Pig. As soon as some neighbor came over, they gave her a Peppa Pig somehow. And the mom said, here it is. So it was, everything just fell into place the way it was supposed to. So
I feel like at times like these, like Yad Hashem sometimes is like just a little bit more like apparent, you know, like
so clear. It was so clear. Yeah.
Do you have, are there a lot of families that are in remote Bet right now that have come or?
I'm hearing about more. Initially, you know, when people found out we had this family, we had a lot of requests to have them for Shabbos. And they said, no, we're not going out. We're staying with the Levy family. So then some family said, well, okay, we'll invite both of you for Shabbos. Then we'll go. But really, people wanted to really embrace them. And so many families said, what can I bring? Can I give them clothes? Can I bring them? You know, our Zumba teacher said, they should come to Zumba class for free. And people just couldn't stop, you know, trying to help and support this family. And since then, I have heard of more. Many families are being put up in hotels. Right. But I think, you know, Revital said she really wanted a family that had children because she wanted her children to return to a sense of normalcy and to smile and to have fun with other kids.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, there are some people connecting families to empty homes that are not being rented out right now. And I'm hearing more and more now that people see that Netivot is not a place and many of these other people can't return. Right. And they don't know when they'll be able to return.
Right. It's so like it's a giant question mark over everything right now. Yeah. How are you both getting by day to day without, you know, like you were talking about, you know, just going forward and being happy and making barbecues and doing those things. Like, what do you do as far as getting by day to day without being, you know, worried and consumed by fear about the future? Or like just wondering about, or just like having that big question mark of like, when is it going to end? When are we going to go home? Like, what are your coping strategies, I guess?
Yeah. Well, I do sometimes barricade myself in my room and just have quiet time. That helps. I was working only remotely for a while, but I did finally go back to work.
And you work as a therapist, you said?
Yeah, I'm a psychologist. I work at a clinic right near Tachanah Merkazit. And in the beginning, you know, nobody really wanted to venture out. But as soon as we established that there is a miklat, that in case of a siren, we can go to the, we can go inside. And we have recommendations from the home front security. And we follow those recommendations. So our girls are going back, they're back at school. Mm-hmm. One of my daughters travels from Beit Shemesh. She takes a bus, takes an hour and a half each way. Hmm. They've had a few sirens, but you know, life, this is the new normal during a war. And so, you know, we do trust the recommendations. We do feel safe and we believe we're in Hashem's hands and, we're happy that we're here. It's hard to calm the family in America though. That's a little
right,
bit hard.
Right.
They keep saying, are you okay? Are you okay? And I can't answer so many emails. Are you okay?
I feel like there was one of my Israeli friends that I reached out to, like, I guess 3 weeks ago, you know, towards the start. She, you know, she's like, I think sometimes in a certain way, it's worse for you in Chutz La'aretz because you just have the emotions and the thoughts and you don't have like the regular day to day. And like, you know how it is with imagination. It can run wild, especially right. for Jewish mothers. Like, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So are you both like discussing what the next steps are, or is it just you take it day by day and the Revital and her family will stay by you until she can return?
Yeah, you know, I think that she's, you know, we spoke about what her thoughts are for long term. You know, so she's also kind of just figuring it out, and we're figuring it out. Things are different now. Just actually today, her two sons went to school. Our kids, it was funny. My girls were trying different yarmulkes on them. So now you look American. You can go to the American school. You could, but they were like big kipas rugas, you know. So they got to know a few neighbors, and they ended up going to school today.
Here, locally. The schools have opened up for them. Wow.
I don't know if it's official or they contacted the principal and he allowed them to do it. But they were so happy. I've never seen kids so happy to go to school, but they just want to have a normal life.
Yeah.
So, you know, these things are, and their oldest son returned to his dorm. He goes to Yeshiva at Mitzvah Yericho. So he returned on Sunday. So the dynamics are changing a little bit too. Mm-hmm. And mom is starting to give her Zoom. She teaches English in high school. So she's starting to give her Zoom classes. So it's a little bit of a different routine. And I've gone back to work too. So right. Things, you know, we're out, we're preparing for the wedding. We're, you know, things are busy. So.
Wow. Well, Sarah, I'm sure this story will be very moving to our listeners. It certainly has moved me in many ways. We're all looking for chizuk. Can you give our listeners one piece of chizuk, whether they live in Eretz Yisrael or Chutz La'aretz? What message would you like to share?
So I've seen a lot of, with my kids too, of survivor's guilt. You know, are we allowed to be happy now? Are we allowed to live a normal life? But it's not normal, but it is. You've probably seen that, you know, I'm okay. And it's also the okay is in bold, but it's light. It says broken in the back. So we're living this kind of paradox, you know, on one hand, like you said, you want to think about the future, but you also, you want to live in the present. And so when, you know, my children tell me, are we allowed to be happy? I tell them that, look, we can live. We live in Yerushalayim and we can go on and we can live in our house and we can laugh and we can have a good time and we should. And that's what the soldiers and everyone is fighting for, so that we could live and we could live our lives and not to feel guilty for living, because that's the way we can fight against Hamas, is by living and living a happy, productive life and having, you know, weddings and having simchas. So, you know, even those, and people want to do so many things too. They say, you know, I feel guilty because this one's doing this and I can't, what can I do? So it's meaningful just to be able to go on to live life. And, you know, Hamas wants us to be traumatized and to be afraid to live in our land, and even just to live as Jews. You know, that's their goal. So by continuing to live and to live a Jewish life and to be happy, that's the way that we're doing our part.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. That's so important, because I do think that we can like slowly destroy ourselves if we can't take care of ourselves because we're having that survivor's guilt. And I'm so glad you used that term, because I wasn't familiar with that term. And it's like, wait, like, what are we doing? Like that's the opposite of what we're meant to be doing. Like we have to, okay, so you need to go, you know, I don't know, whatever, do whatever self-care thing that is so trivial, but like, you know, it makes you feel better. Then we have to do it. Like no guilt at all. It doesn't mean that you're not taking this war seriously or you're not, no se ba'ol, you know, no se ol b'chaviro. We are really, really important, right?
Absolutely. And it should, you know, no se ba'ol, not to the point of not allowing you to function.
Right.
So we know what's going on. And maybe that can even just strengthen us more to live a meaningful, productive life, to be happy as Jews and to live a Jewish life. And I think that's the best we can do.
Amazing.
Well, Sarah, well, I want to thank, first of all, I really want to thank Deanie Cooper-Smith, who made this shidduch. I'm so grateful that the two of you connected and that you can come on DMC. And we said in the beginning, before you came on, this is a story that needs to be told. Your story and your journey and what you're doing is a story that we want to amplify. And we're so grateful that you came on to DMC, that you've opened up your home and opened up your heart to share this journey with all of us. Yish Hashem should continue to give you strength, hatzlacha, and protect you, Revital and all of Klal Yisrael.
Amen. I just want to say that Dini met Revital because we learn together every week, and she came over to learn, and so Revital learned with Dini and with our little learning group, the Netivot Shalom, to get some chizuk. So they met as well.
Fantastic.
Okay. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, obviously so much to unpack here. First of all, just we discussed a number of the elements of Hashgacha in her story. One thing I kept thinking that I didn't say is the fact that Sarah's a psychologist. Mm. And what Hashgacha that Hashem gave her, Revital, and her family. I'm so grateful that she also said, nonetheless, that she does have to like set up boundaries and protect herself and practice, you know, empathy, but also know when she needs to, you know, not play psychologist with the psychologist hat, because that would probably be, you know, unhealthy boundaries for her. But nonetheless, I'm sure she's been able to provide like so much emotional support and lend so much of her knowledge and expertise in this situation.
Exactly. To Revital's family and also to her own children.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. Also, like she was discussing like her thought process. There was very little thinking involved. And sometimes, you know, we don't necessarily encourage that. We think, like, think through all your options, you know, the pros and the cons. And, like, when it comes to helping another Jew, and certainly I think Sarah had this almost like she was prepared for this. Like, she had that story of her grandmother in her mind. And as a child, the rooms in the home, where would she put a baby? It was like, this was Hashem was giving her this opportunity.
Something that has been in her consciousness for a long time. Yeah, exactly.
And not thinking too much, just doing. I think in this case, what an inspiration, right?
I feel like it was very Naseh v'Nishma.
Yes.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, wow. Yes.
And then the fact that she admitted, like, oh, wait, next Shabbos? Like, and her, and here they continue to support this family. Yeah. Remarkable.
It really is remarkable. I was thinking, you know, as I was getting very emotional during our conversation with Sarah, like, I was thinking about that juggling that we are all doing on our own level now about, you know, when we go there and we imagine and we think about everything that has happened, you know, October 7th and beyond, and like how if we allow our minds to go there, or when we allow our minds to go there, it's so easy to start falling apart. Mm. And like the floodgates really start to open, you know, and then having to kind of like put up that wall and keep it together and go through and like live our lives. Like, and like what Sarah said, like living like a really powerfully Jewish life, you know, and like how that is really like our response to terrorism is like, we are going to keep living Jewishly, is what our ancestors have done. Okay, you know, like, not like I have actual ancestors, but whatever, you know what I mean? Like, it's like the spiritual ancestry of the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what the Jewish people have done, like, since literally forever. So, but I was also thinking, like, and this is something that I had shared with a couple of my friends recently, which is like, I really do have to put up that wall and like just function and go through my day. But I feel like, you know, when saying Tehillim or like when davening, it's like that is the perfect time to let that wall down, because we know that the gate of tears is always open. Mm. And so like allowing ourselves to think of these really, you know, difficult moments, like that is a time to do it. You know what I mean?
I think that is really profound, that there is a time. There is a time. It's not that we shouldn't. But there is a time to feel that strongly. And I think you're so right. Like, the davening and the tefillah moments are exactly when we should channel it. And then there's a time to close the sitter and be like, now I have to drive carpool.
And I have to make dinner. And not be, yeah, exactly. And not completely freak out my four-year-old.
Yes, you know? Yes. Here's this episode's takeaway. Think about one thing you can do to take yourself out of your comfort zone to help another person this week.
One last shout out for our DMC yearly sponsor, Town Appliance. Town Appliance is the go-to appliance store, having served thousands of customers since 1979. You can visit their beautiful showrooms in Lakewood, Cedarhurst, and Baltimore, but they also ship, and you'll get the same personalized customer service they're known for. Whether you shop online or call, they'll walk you through the process step-by-step to meet your appliance needs. Visit their website at www.townappliance.com. If you're in the market for a new appliance, Town Appliance is the obvious choice.
Finally, we'd like to acknowledge our sponsor for this episode of DMC, ERA Plastic Surgery.
So ERA harnesses both medical expertise and aesthetic excellence to combine precision and artistry to repair injuries with expertly placed stitches. ERA's procedures result in minimal scarring and maximum restored functioning. ERA also offers a number of cosmetic services, including anti-aging treatments, scar and blemish treatments, advanced laser therapies, and laser hair removal, which help you become the best version of yourself, subtly enhancing your natural appearance. That's the ERA difference, transformation that looks and feels completely natural. ERA offers effortless scheduling and can accommodate urgent same-day procedures. Yes, we know what that's like with kids in the house.
Oh my gosh, yes.
So give ERA a call or send them a WhatsApp message and you'll find that contact information, their phone number, and their WhatsApp group, a link to that in our show notes.
Our next deep, meaningful conversation is with Erica Needleman of Adulting with Erica. Love that name. She is going to be giving us some valuable insights and tips into processing emotions in a healthy way. We think that this is going to be extremely helpful as we are all trying to navigate our emotions and continue normal functioning during this extremely challenging time for the Jewish people.
We always love hearing from our DMC listeners and honestly getting the support and chizuk from you. If this episode was meaningful to you, please reach out. If you'd like to get in touch, you can email us at dmcthepodcast@gmail.com or you can DM us on Facebook and Instagram. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review Deep Meaningful Conversations wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next episode.